The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
All those in favor say aye. All those against say nay. Motion is carried. The time has now arrived for oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 3:07, and we will finish at 4:37. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Over a year ago, CBC reported that there were too many nursing home beds empty. In fact, at the time, it was reported that at any given time, there were about 100 empty beds, and that initiatives were underway to increase the occupancy rates. Last evening, a report was released by CBC highlighting the facts that wait lists for long-term care facilities continue to grow. Mr. Speaker, there appears to be a supply and demand disconnect that continues to widen under this NDP government, and it's the seniors in this province, whether they are waiting in hospital or in community, who are the victims of government's inaction. So my question to the Premier, given that wait lists continue to grow, could the Premier please explain why initiatives that to address the number of empty beds have apparently failed?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is not the case. In fact, over the last 2 years, we have either constructed or have under construction more than 1,000 long-term care beds. We have worked with the long-term care facility operators to smooth the transition from what is a single entry access list through into the beds that are actually serving those communities. And the Leader of the Opposition is right. There is often a delay between the identification of the person at the top of the list and their acceptance of a bed in a particular facility. And this has created situations where, if you add up the number of days, they amount to a substantial amount of unused bed time in these long-term care facilities. And the minister, as part of the continuing care strategy, has been working with the operators to try and minimize that loss of bed usage.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That's what we thought was happening over a year ago, and what we were looking for was some answers from the government on what initiatives they put in place for the last year to reduce that delay, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we all know in this house that seniors don't want to be in a nursing home. However, in the absence of any other substantive programs available, it becomes the only option available for families. For seniors waiting in community for a nursing home bed, the wait time has increased by 36% in the last year, Mr. Speaker, alone. What does this government do in response, Mr. Speaker? The very opposite of what they should be doing to support families and seniors, they slash respite beds. So my question to the Premier, since the government is aware of the contents of this report and the pressures it is placing on families, could the Premier give us some indication how many nursing home beds are empty right now?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Leader of the Opposition would know, the numbers with respect to bed vacancies and indeed the number of people who are in community on any one day or in a particular hospital any one day change because people are admitted or are transferred to facilities on a regular basis. But with respect to respite care, this is an important matter, of course, for communities. I would ask the Minister of Health to provide the Leader of the Opposition with some information on this.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in fact, what the Department of Health has done is converted respite beds into long-term care beds. Mr. Speaker, we had many respite beds throughout the province, some that were occupied as little as 6% annually, sitting there. We were paying for them, Mr. Speaker. They weren't being used. They're now being used, and they're being used to take seniors off the waiting list so that they can have a long-term care bed, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
The purpose of a respite bed, Mr. Speaker, was to give caregivers at home a break with their loved one, Mr. Speaker. Everyone in the province, if they actually understand what a respite bed is, would recognize they would not be full occupancy in a respite bed, Mr. Speaker. And quite frankly, Mr. Speaker, as they've taken a number of respites off the list, not only have they put more pressure on caregivers at home, Mr. Speaker, but wait lists for accessing long-term care is growing under the government, Mr. Speaker. We know that wait times for seniors, Mr. Speaker, in the community for nursing homes beds has increased by 36%. We also know that one key support being provided to these families was respite beds, which government slashed from 77, Mr. Speaker, to 33. One only has to wonder, Mr. Speaker, whether there's a correlation between wait times and the slashing of these respite beds. My question to the Premier, what new home care programs has the government put in place in the last year to provide support for seniors and their families so that they can be kept off of the wait lists in the first place?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. When you have a circumstance where for 94% of the time the bed is empty, surely even the Leader of the Opposition can understand that that bed is better used by actually having a senior in it and being provided with the care that they need. What the Department is addressing, of course, and really what the most recent report underlines is the necessity for the long-term care, continuing care model to change. And in fact, we shouldn't be waiting until people get on the list for a long-term care facility. We should be providing them with support so that they can stay in home. We should be providing them with assisted living options. And in fact, Mr. Speaker, that is exactly what the Department of Health is doing.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I heard the Premier say a few moments ago that, I quote, we built 1,100 long-term care beds. I can't help but ask who exactly he means by we, because the fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, those beds were approved and funded 4 years ago in 2007. Yesterday, the CBC reported on the realities that Nova Scotians face today when it comes to long-term care. And the fact of the matter is today there are 1,700 seniors in this province, like Shirley Dykens, whose two sisters, Nancy and Jean, are forced to care for her as she waits to get into a long-term care facility, Mr. Speaker. Like the PC caucus has been saying all along, the CBC confirmed yesterday that the NDP government cancelled the program that was creating long-term care beds for people like Shirley. When I asked the Premier about this yesterday, he said, we did no such thing. And so my question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is why won't he just admit that he cancelled the 1,320 long-term bed strategy 200 beds short of its intended target?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's not true. The leader of the Conservative Party knows it's not true, and he knows that the strategy that was put in place by the previous government went out to 2016, not out to 2011. So, in fact, the majority of that has been completed already, and what we are doing, instead of waiting to get out to the 2016 date, is we're actually looking at the kinds of supports, the kinds of programming that we can put in place in community to help people be able, seniors being able to stay in their homes longer, so that we are reducing the wait list by reducing the necessity for that being its only option, Mr. Speaker. And that is the important piece that seniors in this province and those organizations who represent them are asking for.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker,
The wait list to go into long-term care is going up. It is not being reduced. It is going up. The fact of the matter is that 4 years ago, a plan was approved and funded to build 1,320 long-term care beds for that very reason. The Premier likes to take credit for the 1,100 that were built under that plan, but he won't even admit the truth that they canceled the remaining 200. And wait lists are going up further because of it. In fact, it has been reported by CBC that wait lists have grown 35.5% up to April of 2010. Mr. Speaker, my question for the Premier is a simple one. Since he won't admit the obvious that they cancelled the 200 beds remaining of the 1,300, why is he turning his back on people like Shirley Dykins, Nancy Davis, Jean Reynolds, and the 1,700 others that don't qualify to age in place and do qualify and do need long-term care?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, we are in a position now where we have some 7,600 long-term care beds right across the province, providing service to seniors through many, many communities in every part of the province. Is demand continuing to grow? Of course it is. We have an aging population, and we recognize that. The organizations who represent seniors and those who are advancing the interests of those people who need this kind of help have said that there has to be a comprehensive strategy to assist people at each stage of the aging process. And we have been engaged with those organizations, designing programs, putting in place supports, and we recognize that there will be a need for additional long-term care beds over time. And in fact, we're in the process of doing some construction of those now. But the simple fact of the matter, Mr. Speaker, is that what is needed is a comprehensive strategy.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Department of Health's own report indicates that there are 3,230 people in Nova Scotia who have been added to the wait list for long-term care in 2010. 37% of those people were already in a hospital, Mr. Speaker, waiting for a long-term care bed. 36% of that group lived in a community where there was no public home care funding, Mr. Speaker, meaning that three-quarters of that group, 2,300 people, need a long-term care bed to get the care that they need. And yet the Premier says we need a strategy, but there's no strategy. Since three-quarters of people who are waiting do not qualify for aging in place or at-home care, Mr. Speaker, and that the only option for them is a long-term care bed, my question to the Premier is this. His government knows that they canceled those 200 final beds under the strategy. Why doesn't he just admit it and tell us what their plan is to help those 2,388 people who have no plan from his government?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, again, I'll just reiterate what the Leader of the Conservative Party says is untrue. In 2009, 2010, Mr. Speaker, we put in place, built some 338 long-term care beds in 10-11. We put in place or built another 450 beds. So far this year, just in this fiscal year, we have built another 114 beds, Mr. Speaker. But I think it's important that people understand what it is that the seniors organizations are actually asking for. So, Mr. Speaker, what I'm going to do is table a letter on behalf of the president of the Group of Nine, Mr. Bill Van Gorder, in which he says, "We are really urging the province to spend more effort helping seniors age in place and support them in staying in their own homes or family homes instead of being institutionalized, Mr. Speaker." And we are, in fact, doing exactly what seniors are asking us to do.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, yesterday in an answer to a reporter's question, the Premier said that there was no job crisis in rural Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, Stats Canada data shows that over the past year, 6,600 people have lost work outside of Halifax, while 9,800, Mr. Speaker, have given up and exited the workforce. Mr. Speaker, 9,800 people losing hope. That is equivalent to the entire town of Bridgewater, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, why is the Premier ignoring the crisis in rural Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, this is the government that has brought 3,000 new jobs to Nova Scotia over the last 2 years since we were elected. Mr. Speaker, this is the government that has made investments in Shelburne, in Yarmouth County, in Cape Breton. Mr. Speaker, we have made investments right across the province of Nova Scotia, in Amherst, in Colchester, Mr. Speaker. That's where we're investing our money, to help businesses in rural Nova Scotia create good jobs so that people can live there and raise their families there.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is the government that has lost 12,500 jobs since they've taken us in June 9, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in this year alone, they've lost 6,600 jobs in rural Nova Scotia under this Premier's watch, Mr. Speaker. The Premier seems to take job losses lightly. We have a clear crisis outside of Halifax, and yet day after day, he stands in this House blaming others. Instead of insisting on real action that will make a difference, Mr. Speaker, for those Nova Scotians. Things like completely overhauling the tax structure to make our province more competitive. In the process, ensuring that all Nova Scotians have the opportunity to get back to work in the communities in which they live. Mr. Speaker, 6,600 jobs lost outside of Halifax in the last year is more than the entire population of Greenwood, and it is more than the entire population of Lunenburg. My question to the Premier, will the Premier stop ignoring rural Nova Scotia and provide a clear economic strategy to put people back to work?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there is a clear economic strategy. It's laid out in the Jobs Here program, which was endorsed thoroughly by chambers of commerce, by business people from one end of the province to the other, Mr. Speaker. It invests in competitiveness, in innovation, Mr. Speaker, in small businesses, in medium-sized businesses, in manufacturing sector, right across the province, from Yarmouth right through to Sydney.
Honourable the Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
That's the plan they call jobs somewhere else, Mr. Speaker. The very organizations that the Premier talks about and boasts about supporting his government are the very people who are standing outside complaining about first contract arbitration. He's ignoring them then, Mr. Speaker, and he's ignoring the fact that 12,500 people have lost their jobs under his government, Mr. Speaker. The Premier has hiked the HST by 2%. This Premier increased over 1,400 user fees outside the legislature. The Premier has stood by while food, gas and power has gotten more and more expensive. And as this Premier has imposed the NDP electricity tax on every power bill in this province. Mr. Speaker, instead of making our businesses more competitive, the Premier has made it harder to do business in Nova Scotia. And that means, Mr. Speaker, it is harder to get a good job in this province. 6,600 people out of work in rural Nova Scotia in the last year alone. Almost 10,000 people, Mr. Speaker, are so disenfranchised with the situation that they have left the workforce. My question to the Premier, just how many people have to lose their job and leave the workforce before you consider a crisis?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I think the Leader of the Opposition is confused. He's just recited all the things that happened the last time the Liberals were in power, Mr. Speaker. It is this government that took the HST off of home energy, off of children's clothing. It is this government that eliminated income tax for seniors on GIS. It is this government that signed the Lower Churchill Agreement with Newfoundland and Labrador. It is this government that assisted with the largest single industrial contract in history, Mr. Speaker. That's a record of success.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives released a report today indicating for the first time since 2003, progress on child poverty has stalled. In fact, the child poverty rate increased. 14,000 children in Nova Scotia living in poverty. Mr. Speaker, power rates are high and climbing, the cost of fuel is exorbitant, and Nova Scotians pay the highest taxes in the country. 12,500 jobs have disappeared since this government took office, and it's getting harder for families to make ends meet, and children are suffering for it. My question is for the Minister of Community Services. Will this minister stand up for children in Nova Scotia and pressure her government to address the affordability issues that are keeping families in poverty?
And the Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to say that I'm very proud to be in a government that has supported families in poverty and low-income individuals through a $100 million investment. And I think it's very interesting to note that the opposition member must realize that that report only went to 2009 and does not include the last 2 years of a $100 million investment from the province of Nova Scotia and this NDP government, which has made a difference.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Grove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I am aware that this report covers 2009, which this government was in office for 6 months. Since taking office, this government has made life more expensive for families. They've hiked the HST. They added a tax on home heating. They raised 1,400 user fees. And to add insult to injury, this government slashed the heating assistant rebate program from $450 to $200. So we should not be surprised that child poverty levels here in Nova Scotia are not good. Mr. Speaker, what will the minister do to end child poverty?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This minister and this government has been working diligently for 2.5 years to move toward ending poverty for children. And in fact, it's very surprising when some of the things that, you know, we have done in terms of increasing the IA personal allowance by $15, increasing the child tax benefit by 22%. We increased foster care rates for the first time in decades. We did it 2 years in a row. We added 250 more spaces to child care subsidies. We doubled the flat rate income exemption for persons with disabilities to 300. We refund on the provincial income tax to seniors. All those things helping family and children. There's a long list. And guess what, Mr. Speaker? When we had a vote in the spring budget, they voted against each and every one of those.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister must be aware that the NDP electricity tax ate up that $15 off the table. Mr. Speaker, children living in poverty cannot wait. We know that children living in poverty do not have the same educational outcomes as kids in higher income families. Children in poverty do not enjoy the same level of health as children in higher income families. Children in poverty simply do not have the same opportunities to succeed. Mr. Speaker, this government... Mr. Speaker, this government is giving nickels and dimes to poor families and then turning around and penalizing them because now their income is above qualifying levels for programs. So, Mr. Speaker, will the minister commit today to removing the child tax credit from income assessments for people applying for government assistance programs if, in fact, they actually do care and are more concerned about poor people than what was done in the past?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Boy, Mr. Speaker, it's amazing that anybody can stand in this House and say those types of things with a $100 million investment. We never saw it from that party when they were in government. We never saw it from the other party. And in fact, Mr. Speaker, the same people that have done the report that the Honourable Member is referencing said this about this NDP government. The current NDP government is to be commended for implementing initiatives targeted at families living in low income in Nova Scotia. The creation of more subsidized child care spaces was one of the outcomes of the Nova Scotia Poverty Reduction Strategy that was introduced in 2009. And I can read on, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking of jobs somewhere else, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is surely aware that McKesson, Canada's largest pharmaceutical distributor, announced a few days ago that they are closing up shop in Nova Scotia. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I have the letter that McKesson sent to all of their customers, and I will quote from it and then table it for the benefit of all present. The letter says, "Dear customer, changes to market conditions and regulatory requirements have forced us to reevaluate our distribution network in Atlantic Canada." The fact of the matter, Mr. Speaker, is that they are reevaluating their distribution network in Atlantic Canada in that they are moving it from Nova Scotia to Moncton, New Brunswick, because of regulatory requirements, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, given that the jobs are being lost here and going to New Brunswick, will he at least take responsibility for the evidence here presented that his government's regulatory policies are driving jobs away?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the Leader of the Conservative Party knows, Nova Scotia has the lowest unemployment rate in Atlantic Canada. Mr. Speaker, it has been this government that has shepherded 3,000 more jobs into this province over the last 2 years. Mr. Speaker, it is this government that is looking to the future with projects like the Lower Churchill and with the National Shipbuilding Procurement Strategy, Mr. Speaker. That is what we're doing here. We are creating the right environment to foster economic growth.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, they're creating the right environment to foster job and economic growth in Moncton, New Brunswick. Fact of the matter is 45 jobs are leaving Nova Scotia and they are going to Moncton because of the regulatory environment that exists in Nova Scotia. This is not something that can be blamed on the global economic difficulties. This is something this government has done to us, Mr. Speaker. So since the Premier won't admit that his own decisions now have cost Nova Scotia 45 jobs and give them to New Brunswick, will at least he admit that his decisions, his regulatory environment, his government is behind the loss of these 45 jobs which are on their way to New Brunswick?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the economic framework, the jobs here strategy, the investments in competitiveness and innovation mean that every single day, Mr. Speaker, companies are making the decision to come to Nova Scotia to set up and to build their future here, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I just tabled the evidence that every single day companies in Nova Scotia are considering moving to New Brunswick, and this is just the latest example. And I might add, this is before the most recent regulatory change, legislative change that that government wants to make around first contract arbitration. The train is just starting, Mr. Speaker, because of the decisions of this Premier and this government. So I will ask the Premier, given that this is the latest example of decisions that his government is making that is costing Nova Scotia jobs, will he at least stop the current labour agenda before more jobs are lost?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Conservative Party that would know that all the jurisdictions that have first contract legislation have stronger GDP growth than Nova Scotia has, Mr. Speaker. They would also notice, Mr. Speaker, that GDP growth in this province is stronger than the GDP growth in New Brunswick, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, since this government decided to cancel the international ferry link from Yarmouth to New England, the entire region of southwestern Nova Scotia has been suffering. Not only has this government killed one of the largest economic drivers of southwest Nova, their lack of a real economic strategy with targets and measurable goals has made the region suffer even more. In the last year, employment in southwestern Nova Scotia dropped by 2,500 jobs. My question to the Premier is, why is he allowed 2,500 jobs to be lost in southwestern Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out to the member opposite, in fact, the number of jobs in the province of Nova Scotia has gone up by some 3,000 over the last couple of years. There are, in fact, differences from county to county, and that has been the historic nature of the job market in this province. But I can tell you this, Mr. Speaker, you know, when we're investing in the Shelburne Shipyards, when we're investing in AF Terrio, when we're investing in Allendale Electronics, we're doing that on the South Shore. We're doing that in Southwest Nova in order to be able to create more jobs for those communities.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his first supplementary.
I'm not sure how much evidence members of this caucus need to present before the Premier realizes that jobs are being lost in this province, not gained. The facts are there. The facts are there in StatsCan. The facts are there in your own department statistics. Get with it. Jobs are going elsewhere. The 2,500 jobs lost over the last year, and that doesn't even account for White Point or the uncertainty with Bowater. Because of this government's neglect, there were 4,300 people who left the workforce last year in the southern region alone. 4,300 people who view the situation that the NDP have created so dire that they have left because they have no other options in this province. So will the Premier finally listen to the facts, pay attention to the job losses, and do something to help those people that are losing jobs every day in this province?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What Statistics Canada says is that from June 2009 to June 2011, the number of jobs in this province went up by 3,000, Mr. Speaker. That's a fact. I'd be happy to give him the Statistics Canada reference if he needs them. But the simple fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, for the first time in this province, there is a detailed economic plan that focuses on innovation, on competitiveness, in investments in companies who have asked us to help them in very specific ways, Mr. Speaker. We are responding to those requests, Mr. Speaker. We are growing the economy. We are creating good jobs.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps the Premier is going to continue to ignore the numbers, but what he can't ignore is the voices of those Nova Scotians losing jobs daily under his watch. If he gets tired of listening to the numbers here in the House, he can come to my community in Yarmouth and talk to businesses that have closed. He can go to Cape Breton and talk to people that are out of work. He can go everywhere else in this province and talk to people that aren't working because he has done nothing to make this province more competitive or appealing to business. Nothing. Mr. Speaker, why, with this job crisis facing our province, hasn't this Premier brought in one piece of legislation to deal with the fundamental issues affecting the economy of Nova Scotia?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the simple fact of the matter is this. We have created 3,000 more jobs in the first 2 years of our mandate. And, Mr. Speaker, it is this government that has brought in the most competitive business tax environment in 20 years.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister responsible for seniors. Yesterday, when asked about times for long-term care, the Premier said, "We all know we have an aging population. We all know that there are growing requirements for models of care that are going to assist people right through the aging process. That means providing the appropriate number of long-term care beds." But yesterday we learned that the demand for long-term care beds is outstripping the supply, despite adding extra capacity, according to what the Department of Health has said. As a result, people who need nursing home care are waiting for the care they require. In fact, for clients of the Cape Breton District Health Authority, the wait for a long-term care bed averages more than 400 days, Mr. Speaker. 400 days, according to their own report. Will the minister responsible for seniors correct what the Premier said yesterday and admit that this government is not providing the appropriate number of long-term care beds for seniors who need them?
The Honourable Minister responsible for seniors.
Mr. Speaker, the long-term care beds are under the responsibility of the Minister of Health, so I'll pass that question along to her.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there's nothing more important than the care of seniors in our health care system. To myself as Minister of Health, my department, and to this government and the Premier. Mr. Speaker, we have consistently opened new long-term care beds. We're halfway through the continuing care strategy. There are more beds to be built. There are more beds that we are doing planning for, Mr. Speaker. And it's not accurate that there's been a cancellation of long-term care beds, Mr. Speaker. Beds continue to be added into the system. But, Mr. Speaker, in addition to the provision of long-term care beds, we are also adding other supports and other services into our continuing care program. We have added a supportive care program for seniors, Mr. Speaker, who, to keep them in their own homes, they're able to get up to $500 a month, Mr. Speaker, to assist them with respite, with homemaker duties, with snow removal. Mr. Speaker, there are many, many things that we are doing to support seniors in their homes, as well as go into a nursing home environment if that's what they require, Mr.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in her own accountability report, and I will table that, the Minister responsible for seniors identifies a goal of the strategy for positive aging as being, and I quote, to enable seniors to live in safe and supportive living environments free from danger, fear, and exploitation, end of quote. Yesterday, we heard sisters Nancy Davis and Jean Reynolds say caring for their sister Shirley while she waits for placement in a long-term care facility has destroyed the quality of life for all three of them and has left them very fearful. Will the minister admit that this government is failing to meet this goal, that the thousands of seniors feel fearful and unsupported because this government is not providing the appropriate number of long-term care beds?
The Honourable Minister responsible for seniors.
Once again, Mr. Speaker, with respect to seniors, they're very, very important to us. And this is a government that has been doing planning and strategy surrounding many elements of keeping seniors home longer. And in terms of the long-term care beds, once again, I will ask my colleague, the Minister of Health, to answer that portion.
Yes, what do you have? The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Mr. Speaker, indeed, being a caregiver for an elderly parent or sibling is a very stressful situation, and all of the research points to that, Mr. Speaker. And if you know caregivers, if you've been one yourself, you know this. And Mr. Speaker, that's why this government has introduced three programs to assist seniors be in their own homes and get support. We've introduced a caregiver's benefit, Mr. Speaker. We've introduced the supportive care program, Mr. Speaker. And we've introduced the personal alert system for seniors who are in danger of falling because they've already fallen, Mr. Speaker. And I would highly recommend that people who are caring for an elderly parent or relative or friend contact the continuing care department and get information about the variety of programs that are available to support them, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I must say that I'm disappointed that the Minister responsible for seniors isn't confident enough in the report that she's released and the information that was supplied to her from her department to answer her own question. As I mentioned, clients of the Cape Breton District Health Authority, Mr. Speaker, wait for long-term care beds for more than 400 days. That's over 13 months, Mr. Speaker. By any standard, that is unacceptable. What is the Minister of Health doing to shorten the wait lists in Cape Breton and ease in the burden on hundreds of Cape Breton families?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, indeed, the wait times in Cape Breton are longer than elsewhere. But, Mr. Speaker, members of the House should also realize that we have more long-term care beds in Cape Breton per the population of seniors than any other DHA, with the exception of Colchester, Mr. Speaker. And for seniors in Cape Breton, they indeed are as eligible for all of the range of programs that we have to support them as any other part of the province. So I would indeed urge people to be in contact with the District Health Authority, with the care coordinators, get information. Mr. Speaker, there are many people who are waiting for long-term care who are not receiving any other services, and they could very well be eligible for those services, and they should avail themselves of those services, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. On October 12th, the Minister announced a properly regulated methadone program for the Annapolis Valley. And while the news was initially welcomed, its success was short-lived. The program, now only 6 weeks old, has a wait list, and those on the list can only receive an assessment, no treatment. My question to the Minister, is this not indicative of a problem much larger than the Minister was willing to admit?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the program that is being introduced into the Annapolis Valley will not only set a very high standard for treatment programs, methadone treatment programs in Nova Scotia, but, Mr. Speaker, it will be a program that will set an extraordinarily high standard for these programs across the country. The Annapolis Valley District Health Authority, who are implementing this program, are working through what is required very carefully, because they care about the quality of the service that they're offering people. They're in the process of using the resources we've provided them to get additional staff in place. They need also to find family physicians to participate in this program, and they're also working to identify additional clinic sites, Mr. Speaker. So the program is unfolding, indeed, absolutely as it should, Mr. Speaker. Anybody who would have thought that there would be instant results within hours of having an announcement of additional resources, Mr. Speaker, are very naive about how long it takes to put personnel in place to address these serious, serious issues, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as the Minister well knows, we are now closing in on 1 year since this issue came to the forefront. Mr. Speaker, people who need methadone in the Valley are now once again forced to wait. As of today, we have had 53 people attempting to seek help. 22 are receiving treatment, while 31 people are left in limbo. Any new cases will receive an assessment only, with the holdup being an issue of insufficient staff resources. Who knows how long it will take to ensure adequate staff resources, and how many we will lose as they slip back into the vicious cycle. My question to the Minister, what will happen to those individuals currently on the wait list who are willing to seek treatment now?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, there are existing programs in the Valley with respect to detoxification. There are support, ongoing support and counseling programs for people, Mr. Speaker. I listened with interest this morning to the interview with the Director of Addiction Services, and he indicated that people who are on the wait list are encouraged to maintain regular contact with the addiction counseling professionals in the Valley, who will support them through the process until they have the range of clinics and personnel in place, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Speaker, families of those on the wait lists are looking for support. This is an issue that this government was reluctant to address in the beginning, is now making an effort to address, but once again, we find ourselves stalled in the process. Madam Minister, I spoke to Stephen George just a few minutes ago, and he will have to wait 3 weeks to whenever, is what he was told. Plus, the website says he could get detox in 1 to 3 days. It took him 30 days. So my question to the minister, how long will those on the wait list for methadone in the valley have to wait?
Honorable the Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, we have provided the resources to the District Health Authority, and they are developing this program. They need to recruit personnel. They need to put a number of things in place before the program is fully subscribed, Mr. Speaker. But they have already begun to bring people into that program. They have done that in a way where they have determined the people who require the services most to begin the program, which is a kind of triaging process that is common in our healthcare system. And Mr. Speaker, I have very high confidence in the healthcare providers in the Annapolis Valley to be able to have a methadone treatment program that other parts of the province will learn from, and indeed other provinces in Canada will look to, because it is being developed with such high standards, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Community Services. We strongly agree with the Auditor General that protection of persons in care deals with a vulnerable sector of our society, and these individuals should have every opportunity to be protected from abuse. However, in the report last week, tabled by the Auditor General, it was revealed that there was a lack of an appeal process for a person who has been accused of such abuse. Would the Minister agree that an appeal process is a basic requirement of due process for people who have been founded of allegations of abuse?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Member says, it is the Protection of Persons in Care Act has been a wonderful act in order to be able to protect those individuals that are in facilities throughout the province of Nova Scotia. And certainly one of the recommendations from the Auditor General was speaking about an appeal act. And what we're looking at, we're working through that process now, because it's coming down to terminology, whether we're speaking about an actual appeal versus a review. So we have taken the advice of the Auditor General, and we are looking at that now and going forward with his recommendations in some manner. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, on page 50 of the report, it states that management at both the Departments of Community Services and Health and Wellness told the Auditor General that they do not believe an appeal process is necessary for this program. On what evidence does the Minister's Department base its gut feeling when they say they do not believe an appeal process is necessary?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, as I just mentioned, what we're looking at is in terms of an appeal process versus a review process. And we are looking at that. Presently, and the Auditor General commended our departments on having a good system, and the process now for the protection of persons in care is very good with how it's set up with our staff and how quickly they go in and they review the complaint. And so therefore, we, as I said earlier, we as a department, Community Services, are looking at what that would be made of in terms of developing a review process versus an appeal process. So it's more set on what the terminology is and understanding of what that terminology would be. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, on page 55 of that report, the Minister's Department said that it planned to research this topic and discuss available options. And my question would be, if the department does not believe an appeals process is necessary, what outcomes does the minister expect from the research? Or is this just a tactic to avoid the Auditor General's clear recommendation?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the Honourable Member will see that over the past history since this government has been formed, that when the Auditor General has come forth with a recommendation in community services, that we have certainly followed his recommendations. And that's what we'll be doing this time again. We'll be looking at a review process and what that means. And that takes some discussion and understanding of how we're going to formulate that and how we'll exactly implement that. And that's exactly what we'll be doing.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, a couple of weeks ago, I asked for an update from the Minister of Health and Wellness on progress around the implementation of recommendations of the Prescription Drug Working Committee. While the Minister spoke of an advertising campaign, which, while a good first step, its effectiveness remains to be seen, but also ignored were four recommendations that can be implemented within current financial resources. My question to the Minister, can the Minister please provide the status on the implementation of those recommendations the committee indicated could be done within existing resources?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I first of all would say that the working group provided, I think, very useful suggestions and recommendations to the department. Department staff are now working through those recommendations with respect to timely implementation, Mr. Speaker.
For Kings West.
Professionals who treat and support individuals with challenging addictions will tell you they need an array of services and interventions to ensure individuals make a complete recovery. I hear from families with young people frequently who say, my son, my daughter seeks support for withdrawal. Some start a methadone program. Others are told to seek counseling. And then they go back to their old habits only to repeat this process again and again and again. It's wasteful fiscally, but most importantly, it's not healthy, takes its toll on those who are addicted and their families. My question to the Minister, has there been any direction given by the Minister around requesting feedback from the Working Committee around whether we as a province have a full array of services available when it comes to treatment?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, with respect to the recommendations of the Working Committee, I have met with members of my staff. We have reviewed the recommendations. They have been tasked with the responsibility for developing a plan to implement recommendations and various options for the Minister. And Mr. Speaker, I look forward to seeing recommendations from that working committee implemented. There are certain things that we have been able to do, such as the provision of resources to the Annapolis Valley District Health Authority for a methadone program, which we've already discussed. We've done some of the public education that I had spoken of before, Mr. Speaker. We also have made some adjustments in the prescription drug monitoring program that will enhance the information that's available through the prescription drug monitoring. So there are a number of initiatives, Mr. Speaker, that are underway, and we will continue to improve services for people with addictions with a view to doing a number of things. We need to do prevention, we need to do treatment, and we need to do enforcement as well. And as the Speaker knows, law enforcement and those issues fall outside the purview of the Minister of Health.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, many experts in the field speak to the need of a residential treatment facility for young people to ensure that recovery is complete and we minimize as much as possible the chances for relapse, an area the Minister can make a difference in. Could the minister please indicate whether there has been any discussion around ensuring young Nova Scotians have access to a residential treatment program?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in addition to the work of the working group, the member may recall that I also referred the recommendations from the working group to the group that is working on a mental health and addiction strategy. And, Mr. Speaker, when that strategy is completed, I will look to see what they are recommending with respect to treatment services and what the best practices are, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, in recent months there have been some conflicting statements on the necessity for breast cancer screening. In an attempt to sort out some of these conflicting statements, guidelines presented earlier this week by the Canadian Task Force on Preventative Health Care simply added to the confusion. Take, for example, women aged 40 to 49 who have no elevated risk of breast cancer. The guidelines state that these women should not have routine mammograms. And the guidelines further advise against the need for self-exams at any age. Now, as the Minister of Health and Wellness is no doubt aware, Nova Scotia is one of the provinces that encourages regular breast screening for women aged 40 to 49. So given this fact, could the Minister please indicate to this House whether the government intends to eliminate routine breast screening in women aged 40 to 49 as per the task force recommendation?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the issue of breast screening is a very important issue to all members of this House, and I was very pleased as Minister of Health when one of the first things we were able to do was to invest in new digital mammography equipment for the Nova Scotia breast screening program all across the province, bringing Nova Scotia up to a very high standard, Mr. Speaker. In the province of Nova Scotia, it is generally the family physician who works directly with their patients and makes recommendations with respect to breast screening. And, Mr. Speaker, we do not, we have not, and we will not turn women away who are between the ages of 40 and 49 who wish to have breast screening done, who have had the conversations with their physicians and feel that is the best course of health care in their situation. But I believe, Mr. Speaker, that in Nova Scotia it is generally the practice for most physicians, family physicians, to make referral for women for breast screening when they're 50 years of age and older. And so these new guidelines essentially aren't going to have a big impact in terms of the standard practice in Nova Scotia, which is very excellent, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. That was pretty clear as mud. Women are left wondering whether the guidelines aimed at addressing the number one cancer killer for women in Nova Scotia have changed or not. But these aren't the only breast screening changes happening in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. According to the most recent annual report of the Nova Scotia Breast Screening Program, two mobile vans, admittedly vans operating without state-of-the-art digital technology, will be taken out of service. Now, while one cannot find fault in the rationale, we do know that the new guidelines are recommending screening for an older age cohort that may find it more difficult to travel to a fixed site. Now, given that the annual report indicates a reduction of over 4,600 kilometers in areas being covered, and information was supposed to be made available about this during the first half of this year, could the minister please table before the end of business today the list of those communities which previously had mobile breast screening service but now do not?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have, once again, I want to say, a very, very excellent, high-standard program for breast screening in Nova Scotia. We will continue to have a very high standard in our breast screening process. And Mr. Speaker, I don't think it's all that helpful to the women in the province to have two non-medical people debate the new clinical practice guidelines and what their implications are for women, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker.
Under final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the job of the opposition is to hold the government to account. I don't think I need a medical degree to ask questions about what we are doing about breast screening here in this province. Mr. Speaker, I can understand the need to make mobile breast screening more cost-effective. I can understand duplication of service. I can understand the arguments around state-of-the-art technology. However, Mr. Speaker, wait times for screening at fixed sites across the province are atrocious. At the Halifax Shopping Centre fixed site, 9 out of 10 patients wait 189 days. At the Dartmouth General, 108 days. At Valley Regional, 113 days, and at Aberdeen, 126 days. Given the new recommendations around guidelines recommend increased screening for women aged 70 to 74, an age cohort that can find it difficult to travel long distance, could the minister please indicate whether there are any plans to purchase an additional digital mobile unit?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, I want to say and remind the honourable member that I'm not a member who gets my medical advice from medical doctors who have lost their medical license like that member has with the Lyme disease doctor she brought in. So, Mr. Speaker, the breast cancer program in Nova Scotia is a very strong program, Mr. Speaker. It will continue to be a very strong program for people all across this province, Mr. Speaker. And
order, 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 please. Order. Order. The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness has the floor, please.
Apparently I hit a nerve, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have a strong breast cancer screening program here in Nova Scotia. In fact, Mr. Speaker, not very long ago, when I was speaking with the Dean of the Medical School, he congratulated the Department of Health on the fact that we were meeting the benchmarks that are recommended for women, particularly women with risk factors, Mr. Speaker. We were exceeding those guidelines, Mr. Speaker. We have a strong program, we have great staff in that program, and women are very well served. And I would encourage women to speak with their GPs and to follow up with the advice that their GPs give them with respect to breast screening, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Cobequid Housing Authority, Local 26, is made up of 36 members employed in the Truro and Amherst offices. They currently manage 893 seniors units, 258 family units, provide management services to Colliston House in Truro, an 18-unit disabled accessible building, support workers provide emergency services to tenants in the Truro H.A. Johnson Manor, and manage 600 family units, rural and native housing across the province. And Mr. Speaker, each member takes great pride in those they serve and the work that they conduct each day. But Mr. Speaker, as of November 10th, the 14-day countdown has begun, and the possibility of a strike is nearing. So my question to the Minister, Local 26 is asking for wage parity with their co-workers at Community Services. Does the Minister and her government believe that they deserve this?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. I do realize, as the Minister of Community Services, that when there's contract negotiations taking place, that there's often a lot of emotion surrounding that, and there's also a lot of misinformation that gets out there, and that's why we don't get involved on the floor to be talking about those type of negotiations, and that's why it needs to sit in with the collective bargaining process, and we've seen over and over how that type of process has been very successful, and we're sure we'll see that again.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, last April, Local 47 Metro Regional Housing Authority walked off the job as they were not called back to the table by the Minister's own department to negotiate a fair and collective agreement. Knowing that this could happen again in the next coming days for Local 26, Mr. Speaker, is simply irresponsible, and it hurts everyone involved, including the seniors, families and children that these members serve. Mr. Speaker, is the Minister prepared to sit back and see the valued employees take to the picket lines and those seniors and families suffer because of her government's lack of response?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, firstly, certainly there will not be any issues surrounding the families and the seniors, and we will be taking care of their needs. They're a prime concern for us, and we know that. And we are looking forward to the negotiation process, the collective bargaining process that's been there for years and years, to come to a resolution on this particular issues.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is a process of give and take. However, the government has not proposed to offer anything for the Local 26 members' classifications or even suggest of doing a review of jobs and classifications as per the review process used in the civil service. Mr. Speaker, at a time when we're debating Bill 102, which carries ironically a title, an act to prevent unnecessary labour disruptions, this minister continues to sit silent and see these members be treated as second-class employees. Mr. Speaker, when will the minister step in, now or when these members take to the strike lines in the coming days?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, all employees that work for the Government of Nova Scotia and work for the Department of Community Services is very important, and we value what they provide us and what they bring to us. But once again, there's often around these situations, there's information that the Honourable Member does not have, and I wouldn't have, because it's around the collective bargaining table where it should be. Right. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on April 26, 2011, I asked the Minister of Agriculture about the status of the Land Review Committee's report. At the time, the Minister told us that the report had gone to an interdepartmental committee and recommendations would be coming out later in the spring. My question to the Minister of Agriculture, where are the recommendations?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good question. The land review report is basically done. Let the member know that. I was briefed on it, I'll say 2 weeks ago, somewhere in that range. Although it had some very good information, I felt that one thing for sure that I would like to see in place before we release the report was around the statements of provincial interest, and particularly for the preservation of farmland, which I find is a statement that's a little vague, and I'd like to see that tightened up. I told my staff, actually both at Agriculture and at Service Nova Scotia, that I'd like to see that statement rewritten and strengthened, because I don't really want to go forward and release the report and then say, oh, and by the way, we're going to do something else, you know, strengthen the statement of provincial interest. So I'd like to have that done at the time that the report is released, but I'm hoping that can be soon, and I mean before the end of December.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that response. Mr. Speaker, the Minister also informed us at the time that his department was putting the nuts and bolts to the NDP's lackluster homegrown success agricultural plan. The Minister stated that his department was putting together a 5-year program for the 10-year plan.
More than a little confusing for Nova Scotians and farmers who seek clarity from the NDP government on agricultural policy, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Minister, when will this new five-year program be completed and available to the public?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope that will be soon. I could say soon, very soon, but I might be misleading the member, and I don't want to do that. I don't have a date on that. I think that 5 year nuts and bolts is just about complete, but I can verify that and get back to the member.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Land Review Committee put in considerable time and effort to complete this report with little or no compensation. The document has been with the minister now for some time. Now an interdepartmental committee seems to be dragging his feet. My final question to the minister, when will people finally see the recommendations from government on this report?
Minister of Agriculture.
As I've indicated to the member in an earlier question, I would really like to see that out before the end of December. And I want to make it clear, certainly the Interdepartmental Committee has not been dragging its feet. They did really good work. Actually, I was quite surprised and pleased by the work that they did in the sense that the recommendations in the review are quite sensible and realistic, and I think by and large quite doable. I think I would agree with the member that this is dragged on way too long, and certainly my target would be by the end of December at the outside to have that out.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, for weeks now, our entire caucus has been questioning the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism about his approach to economic development. We have pointed out that there is not one target in his plan, not one measurable outcome for success. This strategy is not working, and the Minister does know better. If he were forced to give this a grade during his time at Henson College, he would have no choice but to give it an F, Mr. Speaker. It's business 101. If you don't have targets, if you don't have numbers or outcomes, if you don't have anything you can measure, well, you don't have business. And you certainly have no business being in business development. So my question to the Minister, why has the Minister forgotten the basics of business development? And why does the government have no real targets or measurable outcomes?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, you know, I would caution any member in this House not to be caught up in targets. Targets, Mr. Speaker, had not done well for previous governments, as it's been already been proven, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we are doing is we have, and I as Minister, not only have faith in the Jobs Here strategy and the Jobs Here plan, but also have faith and confidence in the good staff that we have that are implementing that plan. And I will further add, Mr. Speaker, is we have faith in Irving Shipyard. We have faith in all of the corporate citizens of Nova Scotia that we will employ as many people as humanly possible.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, a business plan, the components of a business plan, they're irrelevant until you get to the numbers and you get to the financial data and you see where all the components and the aspects of a business case come together. The targets are obviously important. Without them, we don't have anything but a marketing plan, Mr. Speaker. So I'm very concerned that the minister would stand here and say the targets don't matter. Of course they matter. We're talking about public dollars, Mr. Speaker. We're using taxpayers' dollars for these programs. Of course we need numbers. We need targets. We need outcomes. We need a finish line. So that's very frightening that the minister would suggest that we don't have targets or numbers. When we press the minister, he talks about one-off developments, but doesn't talk about the overall targets that he's put together, if he's put any together, and obviously it doesn't sound like he has.
When my colleague from Colchester North pressed the minister on why the Aboriginal community had been left out of his strategy, the minister wandered off the subject. When my colleague from Preston asked why there were no targets for African Nova Scotian community, the minister didn't answer. When the leader of the official opposition demanded to know why women were left out and why their wages decreased by 5.7%, again, no answer. So, Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister, why are all these groups, communities who traditionally have had to fight unemployment and low wages, why are these groups not represented in a strategy?
Good question. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I could stand here at great length and talk about those particular groups that member has mentioned. I would caution the member to be very careful when talking about the Black community of Nova Scotia. When talking about the First Nations community of the Mi'kmaq community, Mr. Speaker, our plan, for the first time, Mr. Speaker, we have a plan that's called the Workforce Strategy Plan. Mr. Speaker, for the first time, we've got a plan that's all-inclusive. Now, Mr. Speaker, now I know the members opposite don't like to hear this, because what it is, it's a reflection on what they didn't do, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, two answers and two cautions from that minister. I don't understand. I'm on the official opposition side. We ask these questions. We're struggling for jobs in this province. People are hurting, Mr. Speaker. We are entitled to ask the minister this question, and rather than lecturing me about his answers, he should give real numbers. Where are the numbers? It's quite simple. The NDP job strategy is not working because Nova Scotians are not working, Mr. Speaker. In the past year, 6,600 people lost work outside of Halifax. 9,800 in rural communities exited the workforce, Mr. Speaker. This is unacceptable to Nova Scotians, and it should be unacceptable to this minister. Yet, he seems happy to spend all of his time on billboards and glossy logos and lecturing me in this House about what I should and shouldn't be saying. So my question: when will the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism face the reality that there's a crisis in Nova Scotia and get on to the work of establishing hard economic targets and measurable outcomes to grow this economy and get people jobs in this province, Mr. Speaker?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, if that member opposite feels like he's being lectured, because he deserves one. And Mr. Speaker, I will add, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. Order, please. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it's a pleasure for me to rise in my place. And I can tell you, if the opposition parties are so intent on getting a number, one number that I do have for them that is a fact is that under this government, Mr. Speaker, we created 3,000 jobs, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
400 years ago. 400 years ago.
Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North has the floor. Order, please. It's a stormy night, so let's have some decorum in here this evening, please. Can I please have the floor for the Honourable Member of Cape Breton North, please?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there have been 5,400 fewer full-time jobs in Nova Scotia since the NDP took office. In the same time frame, 8,400 people have given up and left the workforce. In the last year, unemployment everywhere in Nova Scotia went down except for Halifax. Cape Breton is down 2,100 jobs. North Shore is down 1,400 jobs. Annapolis Valley is down 600 jobs. And Southern Nova Scotia is down 2,500 jobs for a total loss of 6,600 jobs. Mr. Speaker, will the minister admit there is a job crisis in rural Nova Scotia and that sweeping it under the rug and pretending it doesn't exist is no way to solve this problem?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, those numbers are misleading. And, you know, what those numbers are, they represent summer employment. They represent a whole lot of things. The bottom line, Mr. Speaker, is that we came into power at a time when things in Nova Scotia were dormant. What we've done, Mr. Speaker, is since we've been in power, the fact is we've created 3,000 jobs, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that is a fact. And we will continue. We have a strategy. The strategy is working. We are going to stand by that strategy, and we were going to let it wind its way through and continue to create good jobs, good job opportunities for Nova Scotians in every region of the province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, when the Premier was asked by reporters about his thoughts about the crisis in rural Nova Scotia, he said, "I disagree that there is a crisis." Mr. Speaker, this government is out of touch with reality if they believe that the vast number of layoffs and closures at businesses like Bowater, New Page, Minas Basin, Fundy Gypsum, Composite Atlantic, New Minas Co-op, Hart and Windsor, and Port Hawkesbury, Ed Martin Printing in Windsor, Margolians in Truro, White Point Lodge, Signature Styles Call Center, and countless other small businesses that don't make the headlines, not in crisis. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is, does the Minister agree to the Premier that the loss of 6,600 jobs in rural Nova Scotia in a year is not a crisis? And if it isn't, what would he call it?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
The question is, do I agree with the Premier? Absolutely, Mr. Speaker. Absolutely.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
That's a double standard, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, rural Nova Scotia has been hit hard by the NDP. Just yesterday, we learned that seniors in Cape Breton are waiting 400 days for long-term care beds. Cape Breton, the region with the highest unemployment rate in the province at 16% for the first 10 months of 2011, is in a crisis. North Shore, Annapolis Valley, Southern Nova Scotia all have double-digit unemployment rates and are in a crisis. Mr. Speaker, but this government continues to say that our economy is good. Mr. Speaker, my colleagues tell me that when the NDP member for Halifax, Chignecto, was in opposition and allowed to speak, he said that if things are going so well in our community, why aren't all of the areas of the province seeing the benefits? Mr. Speaker, well, my question to you to the minister is, does the minister agree with his colleague that if things are going so well in our economy, then why aren't all areas of the province seeing the benefits?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I do agree with, and I've heard the good member of our caucus say that there are some things in the global economy that are out of our control. There are some things that happen by accident that are out of our control, such as a fire, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what we are doing, Mr. Speaker, is we are working with Nova Scotians to support and to create new jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, through the PIP program, Mr. Speaker, through the small loans guarantee program with the credit union, Mr. Speaker, through the clean technology fund, Mr. Speaker. We are doing our job, and we will continue. We will continue to work with those employers, with the student population, with Nova Scotians to create and support good, sustainable jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Rural and Economic Development. Mr. Speaker, time and time again, this caucus has demanded that the NDP government acknowledge that their failed policies are causing harm to rural Nova Scotia. Even when pouring millions and millions of taxpayers' dollars into the NDP ridings in Pictou County, that region is still suffering with 1,400 job losses. In earlier question period today, the Premier talked about new jobs and he mentioned Colchester County. I was interested in that. So my question to the Minister is simple. I hope he will understand it and I hope he will respond. How many new jobs have been created in Colchester North since this government took place?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do know this, Mr. Speaker, that it was certainly less than 3,000 because what we've done since we've been in government, we've created 3,000 jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will do, despite the way the question was worded, Mr. Speaker, I will attempt to get some concrete numbers for that member. And obviously, it's 4:30 in the afternoon. That's not going to happen today. But I will make sure that I will put that on the agenda for first thing tomorrow morning, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This caucus has pushed the NDP to help make Nova Scotia more competitive. It's essential that our businesses are able to compete so that we can grow jobs and get Nova Scotians back to work. But this government continues to hike the HST, hike the user fees, and put a tax on gas and power and food, and all of these continue to drive up the cost to the average Nova Scotians. So my question to the minister is this. What economic policies that he brags about have done anything for business in Colchester North?
The Honourable Minister for Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, that's an easy question, Mr. Speaker, because for the first time in years, what did we do? We reduced the small business tax credit. You know, but Mr. Speaker, we didn't only do it once. We did it twice since we've been in government, Mr. Speaker. Twice, Mr. Speaker. For the first time in how long, Mr. Speaker? Now, Mr. Speaker, we will continue to do those things that are in the best interests of Nova Scotians. And, Mr. Speaker, and I hate to burst a bubble here, but you know what? The it's not the opposition party that's forcing us to do anything. Mr. Speaker, the force that we get is from within, Mr. Speaker, because we want to do right by Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and by golly, that's what we're doing, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do look forward to the numbers that the Minister will be able to provide for new jobs that have been created in Colchester North. That was the question. That's what I expect to get answered. New jobs in Colchester North in the last year. So, Mr. Speaker, my final question. It's clear. Anyone who's paying attention knows that there is a crisis in rural Nova Scotia. People are crossing the border to shop in New Brunswick. And you know, when people cross the border to shop in New Brunswick, that's less money for our businesses here in Nova Scotia. And what does that do for small business? It causes them to close. Mr. Speaker, the folks in Colchester North, Mr. Speaker, they're good people. They pay their taxes. They want to work. So my question to the minister is this. How many more local businesses in Colchester North have to close? How many more people in Colchester North have to lose their job before this minister will acknowledge that he and his government have done nothing for Colchester North job creation?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what I will acknowledge is that this government, not any other previous government, but for the first time, has a plan. We are sticking by that plan. The plan is working, Mr. Speaker. And for the first time, Mr. Speaker, we've built on that plan. Is that what we've done, Mr. Speaker, is we've done the right thing by Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. And you know what? That's proven time and time again whenever I go out and I talk to the Chamber of Commerce or the Board of Trade, Mr. Speaker. I see it on the street, Mr. Speaker, when people tell me you're doing a good job. Keep it up. We like what you're doing. And keep up the good work, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the lack of attention that this government is paying to rural Nova Scotia is costing community jobs. In the Annapolis Valley, the beautiful Annapolis Valley, a great place to live, however, has not been immune to job losses. And Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to give the minister the numbers. He knows the numbers. He knows they're negative. I would just like for him to go from Windsor to Digby, take a look at the main streets, take a look at the downtown, see the businesses that have the curtains drawn, paper over the windows, and you'll see where jobs are disappearing one, two, three, four, five at a time. My question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development Tourism, why is it that the only thing that we seem to be able to measure out of the Minister's economic development strategy is job losses?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, I can tell you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to apologize to the House, Mr. Speaker, because I was late coming into question period today. And do you know, Mr. Speaker, why I was late? Do you know where I was last night, Mr. Speaker? I was in Digby, Mr. Speaker. I was in Digby at a Board of Trade meeting, Mr. Speaker. And guess what? Guess who the guest speaker was, Mr. Speaker? Guess who it was? It was me, Mr. Speaker. What, Mr. Speaker? Mr. Speaker, they were having difficulty selling tickets, Mr. Speaker. But guess what happened? Guess what happened, Mr. Speaker? They got me to be the guest speaker, Mr. And they oversold. They oversold, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, and do you know, Mr. Speaker, as a result of last night, Mr. Do you know where I was this morning, Mr. Speaker? Do you know where I was this morning, Mr. Speaker? I was at the municipality of Digby. I was in their chambers, Mr. Speaker. I was there. I had a meeting. I had a meeting, Mr. Speaker, with the mayor. I had a meeting, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
I'd say he was trying to find
order,
one job.
The time allotted for oral questions put by members, the minister, has ran out. I will now recognize the host leader for the official opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, would you please call Resolution 2389?
Resolution 2389. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Please rise to say a few remarks around Resolution 239. Mr. Speaker, I want to read the operative clause. It says, therefore, it be resolved that all members of the House of Assembly condemn the NDP government for raising taxes and fees and standing by silently while power, gas, and food prices have risen by an unacceptable rate and for their inaction on the 12th.